This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What a Baytown! Hey, it's the quietest man in radio, Joel Blank, along with Trader Nick. As we get ready for the next 3 hours on the Press Box, as my man Patrick Creighton's on the way out, we are on the way in, and we, though I don't really want to, will work together for the next 3 hours.
The quietest man in radio.
Trader Nick, the quietest. Doing what Trader Nick does. A day after he pissed off every female and some males, now he wants to come at his buddy, the one that has his back, his co-host. No, he doesn't want to play team ball. He wants to put me on an island, and he and Patrick Creighton want to take shots at me with a BB gun. That's fine.
I'm just saying, there's two things that has happened when I've worked with both you and Patrick Creighton. And I've heard both of you with the decibel of y'all's voices through that, what I thought was a soundproof door, or maybe it's a soundproof door. Neither one of you have soundproof voices. I don't know. But now I'm starting to believe that you're slightly loud, just slightly louder than Patrick Creighton. Not significantly louder, but I think I was wrong. I think at first I genuinely believed you. I thought Patrick Creighton was without a doubt the biggest yeller, the loudest person on the fourth floor. Now you take that role. Because that's what you do.
Because I have verification and proof from the interns and others that said they don't hear me that loud unless I get really fired up on a certain topic. And they said it's been like 3 weeks since the ass clown said, oh, you mentioned Lisa in the first segment again, that I even got loud. They said that's a regular every segment thing with Patrick Crate, and they hear him through this door here all the time. So I can go on the contrary. I'm just a little disappointed that the loyalty level between us all the years now that we've worked together
is gone.
And by
the way, the fact that you're loud, look, we had several loudspeakers on this fourth floor before, okay? And all of you guys are great broadcasters who've had, you know, they've had great careers. Patrick Creighton, you're one of them. I mean, Josh Innes probably would have been the loudest person on the fourth floor if he still was doing shows here, but he's gone. So now I think you take that crown.
I didn't know he left. So never once have you heard me in a rejoin come back at a decibel level. Never once have you heard me say, Patrick Creighton along with Charlie Palilla on the Charlie Palilla Show. It doesn't happen. But you guys want to believe your fallacies, that's fine. That's fine. And Pat, on the way home, yeah, you're hearing me too. That's right. It's both of you, you and Nick. And I had it out with Pat before I sat down in this chair.
On Radio Rose, I would argue Patrick is louder than you. But in the studio, I feel like you're louder than him. Something about your voice, it just increases the decibel level when we're in studio. Now, on Radio Rose, like you can ask Chad Ochocinco on that one. Because he was there and he heard Patrick speak or yell. Whatever you want to call it. I will never say you're louder than Patrick again. I will lie.
No, but I don't want you to lie. I just know exactly where we stand in terms of our relationship. And it's a different place than I thought
it
was.
Why has it got to be a loyalty thing with you? Why has it got to be a loyalty thing with you?
Because you know what?
Time.
I don't let people crap on you.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. If you say stay out of it, like text line, or you're going to respond to so-and-so or whatever, then you got this. But if you need me at any time, I'm there for you. Maybe not so much.
Yesterday, I got a whole lot of hate on the text line. I didn't see you swinging for the fences, getting my back there. I just took the business
if you go
on
back
Twitch
and listen,
on text.
There were several occasions within the show that I said, you're entitled to your opinion, and you're entitled to say whatever you're going to say. And just because someone disagrees with you doesn't make you wrong or right. So I did have your back. You were the one that just took a big can of gasoline and threw it on the fire and then got a freaking blower and decided this isn't enough. I need a towering inferno.
I just said you were louder than Patrick Creighton. And
you traded 409 in for 832 and other area codes yesterday on a very large basis.
I should have asked Patrick that question because he was talking about how he's been married for 20 years and he knew his wife for 5 years before being married to her for 20 years. So 25 years in total. He's probably getting
she's
laid.
She's a saint, by the way.
Is she? Oh, she's a nice lady. I've met her.
If that story is true, she has to be.
Well, that's what he said. And he's admitted. but he probably has sex twice a year like you do. Like, that's, I meant to ask him that question, and
I forgot. Were going to ask Patrick how many times in a year he has sex?
I would be shocked if it's more than two. I don't think he'd be very upset with me saying this right now. Married and has kids. That's what happens. Twice a year.
That's not true.
Tops.
That's not necessarily true.
Tops.
That's not necessarily true, but you just gave me the bad visual of the day that I did not need. And for that, I hate you even more. But people are going to do what they got to do, and I'm not mad at them for it. Giancarlo Stanton, Nick.
Oh, no. Did he do something?
Yeah. So he, after last night's fiasco, which, by the way, I hate being Ben Dubois again, or Dubose.
But you're about to be.
But you saw the pitch that I saw. Before Stanton hit the double that tied the game, he should have been called out on strikes on another. I almost woke everyone in the house up.
Yeah. Well, Patrick was talking about it, too. At one point, there was every single pitch that he had thrown at one point that was an absolute strike. And for whatever reason, the umps just kept calling it other ways. I don't know if it's – I mean, I'm not going to say the umps is the reason why the Astros are –
No, the bullpen's awful.
Terrible. But at the same time, they're not helping the cause.
Like, if you have Kent Emanuel and he's left-handed and he's proven already in a short period of time that he can handle the moment and he's got decent, good stuff, I never need to see Brooks Raley again. Brooks Raley and his 9.5-plus ERA and all of his little quirky little twitchy little my arm, and then he can't, you know, he can't throw strikes, and when he does, it's like
so funny.
Like 81 miles an hour. I'm done with him. When he came in, I was done. I was on my way out because I knew it was over.
Do that one more time.
It's always moving all over the place between every pitch. Well, you know what? If you need WD-40, Chief, go pitch for the Skeeters.
Someone on Twitter told me the same thing about Kent in yesterday's game. They should have just put Kent in.
Emanuel, yeah.
I don't know if that would have made a significant difference because I feel like our, you know, the bullpen, regardless of who they put in there in that situation, they might have struggled. I mean, the bullpen ain't, it's not that strong.
At least we have Brian Abreu on back-to-back nights.
Your boy.
God, Brian Abreu is this year's Josh James. And please don't give me this year's Josh James either, by the way. Let that hip injury linger. Let him pull an Eric Gordon for all I care. Let him pull the Eric Gordon of all Eric Gordons. We don't need him back this season. I need James Click to actually do something. I need him now to realize this team is good enough that I need to do something to step up and help them as the general manager. I need to find them a real center fielder, and I need to find them some bullpen help. That's what I need James Click to do. I don't need James Click looking like Adam Clanton for another day, sitting behind a desk doing whatever that Jim Crane tells him to do. I need him to tell Jim Crane, these guys need a little help. I got to go get it for them. That's what I need, Nick. Not too much to ask, Trader Nick.
Is it too much to ask not to send Correa home if you think he's going to get out?
I didn't have a problem with that. It took two perfect throws to get him, and they got him. That's fine. But there, you know what? At that point in the game, especially with the conditions they were playing in, the chances of something going wrong were enough for me. And I thought that I don't really dig his slide. I think it looked like to me that he was trying not to get hurt instead of really trying to get the plate.
Correa?
But yeah. But at the same time, I don't mind the send there. I'm not mad at that.
Okay.
That's a second straight night, by the way. Yuli missed a home run by just inches.
That's got to be frustrating for him because he's hitting so well. He's definitely got the contact. He feels confident with his plate appearances. That one where he hit the top of the wall, I think that was in the first game, right? That was just unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, that was very frustrating. But no, I mean, at least you saw some of the bats do well. Diaz got an RBI.
See, I think he should be in right field.
You think so?
I saw Tucker hit a ball. He blasted a ball today to like the shallow outfield. I mean, until he gets his stuff figured out, he and Straw should both be sitting, and you can't sit both of them. But I mean, the outfield in terms of their average and where they're at is killing them. Aside from Michael Brantley, who's carrying them in the outfield. I just think that Diaz gives you a steady bat, got a hit last night again. I mean, he gets you hits. He's a competent major league hitter, and he didn't kill you on the relay on the one play in the outfield that he got that was vital. He got it in quickly. He gave them a chance. Kyle Tucker, to me, is just as big a liability or a steady force in the outfield as Diaz. I'd keep Diaz out there and let Tucker have, you know, a week or so off to try and figure it out.
You're right.
See,
I think
where
Tucker
at
is more of a liability. At least right now, he's in I'm not bleeping it up mode. Like, he's not going to give you the most unbelievable performance right now. He'll still get you a hit here and there. but he's not bleeping anything up. Tucker has kind of bleeped things up here and there. So I feel like I'm not, in terms of being a liability, if you want to have that discussion, I tend to agree with you. Tucker's probably a bigger liability right now, but that could change easily with Diaz. Don't think for one second that this is just going to last throughout the entire season. It'd be fantastic, but I don't think it's going to last the entire season. But he does make plays on defense, and I feel like that's important. But no, I mean, unfortunately, two out of two losses, two games on the road in New York, both of them are losses, and now they're down
but
to one.
You know what? Again, I go back to this. It's early May. It doesn't matter.
In the grand scheme of things,
Tigers,
it doesn't matter. Yeah,
came in here and swept you, and now they're the Tigers again. Things are going to happen in a 162-game season. So it's not the end of the world by any means. It would be great to get Gerrit Cole today, but I'm not expecting it. But no matter what, the sun's going to shine tomorrow. You got a weekend series at home against the Blue Jays, and you press forward. You're only with all these slip-ups the last 2 days, this still was a successful road trip. You took it to the Rays. You're playing good base. Before that, you took, what, 3 out of 4 from the Mariners and the Angels. And so you go, you move on. You play the next game on the schedule. So I'm not mad at them by any stretch. I just think that you've seen enough of this team to know they can compete. Now as a general manager, you need to go get them a little help in one shape, yeah, way, shape, or form.
Well, you'll see them again. There's so much baseball for the Astros to play between now and the next time they see the Yankees. And the good thing is the next time they see the Yankees, it's going to be at Minute Maid Park. So you're not going to have to deal with everything that Altuve and everybody else has been dealing with. Apparently, I mean, we had a guest on in the last show with Patrick Creighton, Bob Nightingale, and he was, you know, they were talking about how, like, the F-bombs and the profanity was always a thing in the stands. But for whatever reason, this time was just next level profanity, like the consistency of the profanity and the fact that platforms like the Yes Network would consistently pick it up and there was really nothing being done about it. That was kind of different. That was unique. So you don't have to deal with that when they come back to Minute Maid in a few weeks or a month or however long it takes for them to come back. So I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for Altuve. I don't think Altuve is handling the booze and the Yankees well at all. I think he is mentally screwed in terms of that. I'm not saying he's going to be like that the entire season, but I don't think he's handling the Yankees criticism well at all.
But it's a point you brought up that's spot on because, Nick, when you think about it, you know, for all of his struggles last season, it took Dusty Baker coming out before the start of this season to say, hey, you know what? He wasn't dealing with the buzzer stuff real well. Then he had a death or two in the family. He had to deal with some stuff, and it all came, you know, it came down on him hard. And so he was, you know, it was hard for him to focus. Well, it kind of rolls into what we're seeing this year, too, like what he's done here at Yankee Stadium. He got a hit today, but overall, it looks like you're right. They got permanent space in his head, and he don't like it.
Yeah, it's not, and he has to show that he can overcome that. And he's not doing well at home when the Yankees come to town, Joel. That's not enough. He has to be able to deal with this criticism. You're the best player on this team. Like, you got to be able to, like, you know, you got to be able to show that you're a leader and you can get through the criticism. And playing well when the Yankees get here is not enough. You got to do this on the road because the Yankees are not going to be the only market. They're just going to be the worst market. You're still going to get the boos. You're still going to get the hate. Who knows if you're going to get more trash cans at some of these other markets.
You know what you're going to get right now, Nick? Air Jordan. No. That's what you're going to get right now. A bomb from Air Jordan. And we are tied. Take that, Gerrit Cole. Tell me where the pine tar is, buddy. Tell me where the pine tar is today. That's all I want to know. Dick Willie says, stop pitching to Stanton. Well, you know what? It's not a bad strategy. The guy is on fire. When you look at the numbers that he's putting up, and as I mentioned, he's hit 5 of the last 6 games, he's had 3 hits or more in each of those 5 games. Those are pretty good numbers. So we'll keep you updated on the Astros game as we get it started here. By the way, there are reports surfacing, and I don't know what this means and if he's completely done or if something will be done and someone will give him a chance. But there are reports surfacing on social media that as of today, the Anaheim Angels could be releasing Albert
Pujols. No, he's released. It's done.
It is done. All right, so it is a done deal. Does anybody pick him up? I just...
But they designate him for assignment, so I don't know. I don't know what happens if anybody else picks him up like you mentioned, but yeah.
I don't know that anybody wants a guy that can't run that could maybe play first base for you, but again, can't run and is, you know, he can put the bat on the ball. He's got some home runs this year, but is he anybody that anybody's going to want down the stretch. I doubt it. I don't know that I like what the Angels did, though, simply because of the fact that that's not a good way to have a good send-off for a future Hall of Famer that you went out and talked into leaving St. Louis, and you threw all this money at him, and you know that he's already said this is his last year. You can't let him go out on his own terms. You got to do it like that.
I hope you invested that $253 million contract well, Albert.
I really will not lose a day or a minute of sleep thinking that he won't be okay financially. It's just that he deserves to kind of go out on his own terms. But, all right, we are late for a break, so we're going to get the first one in, but that means there's plenty of opportunities for you guys to get on. That means the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776 for calls and texts, otherwise Twitch and or Twitter, at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Or I think Nick's going to have a new account, too, which is at Trader Nick.
Negative.
So in the meantime, when we are together, even though we're not actually getting along, it's the Press Box, ESPN.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Well, just getting started on the show. We go till 4. Who's in today on the Blitz? Do we have any clue? We'll find out.
I'd have to look.
Creighton was yesterday, but then Creighton filled in on the Charlie Palilla show.
I forgot.
I'm not mad at you for that. I'm mad at you for other things. So
what, for calling you loud?
Astros and Yankees tied at 1.
Because you scream, Joel Blank?
No, I don't scream.
You yell at everybody? You yell at the interns?
No, I certainly do
you
not.
You definitely can't bully Tyler out there because he's almost as big, if not bigger, than you.
He loves me. And he
does
knows
he?
Yeah, and he knows
that's fake
I don't
love. He don't like you.
Not at all. So, where do you want to start, Nick? It's a 1-1 game. Yordan has taken Gerrit Cole deep after Giancarlo Stanton continues to stay red hot. There's nothing to speak of on the text line. Our normal Twitchers are doing their thing, and we're into some kind of discussion, except for the fact that they're trying to think about the biggest Astros killers because of Albert Pujols. Carlos Zambrano has been mentioned. That's a good pull. Jim Edmonds has to be somewhere on that list. Larry Chipper Jones was mentioned. But, you know, over the course of history, you got to think about the Astros were basically a National League team. So it was normally going to be someone from the Cubs or the Cardinals or their main rivals or in the playoffs. And Pujols, that ball that he hit against Brad Lidge will live in infamy. And
forever.
I mean, it should have had a stewardess on it the way it got out. And I thought that it was going to shatter the actual glass in left field. It was, we had a game that night and we were playing either Milwaukee or Seattle before Ray Allen became a Celtic. And we were talking after the game and they were getting on the bus and it looked like the Astros were going to clinch it. And I was like, I'll keep you updated. He's like, well, I got my phone. I'm going to try and stay updated too. And I remember I was walking to my car, and he called me, and he goes, oh, my God, did you see it? And I was like, wait, what? They won the pennant. And he goes, no. He goes, the ball that Albert Pujols just hit off of Brad Lidge was an absolute rocket.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming people are happy that the Angels have officially released Albert Pujols. And the $253 million that he made, look, hopefully he invested it well, but I don't think anybody's ever going to forget that home run. No one down here ever forgets the performances that Pujols has pulled against the Houston Astros, and I don't think that memory goes anywhere. And you know, Charlie loves to play that highlight for you Astros fan, but not me.
I would never do that to people. I wouldn't do that
to you
guys.
Just want you to know, Charlie's the one who does that.
Charlie loves that because he's an instigator.
He wants to throw that salt in that wound.
Yep.
And he wants you to feel the pain. But Joel and I, not so much.
Oh, no.
Not so much.
Oh, boy.
So what is your thoughts on the whole John Means situation? Did you see how Severino was not able to get that catch and blow the perfect
it's
game?
It's unfortunate, right? And I think that from a quirky way, he'll be known as the guy that really should have had a perfect game, and the reason why he didn't wasn't a walk or a hit batsman. And look, we talked about it that it's earlier hard. This year, the two other guys that had no hitters, the only reason why they weren't perfect games is because they had one hit batsman, and one of them was in the ninth inning. So it's extremely unfortunate. The fact that the runner was erased, caught stealing right after that, makes it even more unfortunate. The thing is that everybody's reacting to it now that it's in the rearview mirror. But at the time, I don't think anybody on that field was thinking, well, he could be flirting with a perfect game, and this could mean something. You know, in the third, fourth inning, or whenever it was in the middle of the game. No one's thinking about the potential for a perfect game versus a no-hitter. They're just thinking about, hey, did you get the out? Was he eventually off the field and didn't score? Well, then you did your job.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fact a no-hitter is enough for a lot of people. I mean, the anticipation in most venues when that's happening, I feel like is for the no-hitter. I think you're kind of right. They're just hoping that you just get the no-hitter. But, I mean, the perfect game, that's nearly impossible to do, and it's so difficult without any walks, like you mentioned, without anybody getting hit by a pitch. I don't know how Means feels about it. I don't know how Severino feels about it, but I'd feel some type of way. Regardless, you still get a good performance for
well, and you know what's funny is when you read his body language, he thought he gave one up the inning before. The ball that was caught on the warning track up against the wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When they showed him in the dugout, whoever the left fielder was, he looked at him, he goes, I thought it was gone. He goes, the minute I heard the bat, I thought it was gone. You could read his lips. So he thought that, and they always say, in a no-hitter, there's always going to be one or two plays where luck's got to be, you know, your way. It obviously was. But the fact that the last lefty to throw a no-hitter for the Orioles, there were two prior to 1917. And the last no-hitter for the Orioles was, I believe, in like 69 or 71. So you're talking about, you know, flirting with 50 years. The Pirates are now on the clock as the longest streak for a franchise without a no-hitter. But, you know, He got everything he needed out of that start. And you know what the good thing was? I was really worried about him. And we had talked about this in the past about his pitch count. And it's early in the season. And, you know, we talked about in the past some of these pitchers, even veteran pitchers, that when they threw the no-hitter, they extended themselves so far. Dare I say Mike Fiers. But for, you know, and now we hate Mike Fiers. But Mike Fiers threw a no-hitter, but he threw like 130 pitches in that game. And it caught up with him. Santana from the Mets had to get that no-hitter, and he got that no-hitter, but he extended himself to 130-some pitches, too, and he was never the same. Then he needed surgery, and he was never the same pitcher ever again. So the fact that he could have got thrown a lot more pitches coming back out, he hadn't been into the eighth inning until yesterday in a start, and he went nine. I think he threw like 115 pitches. He got the no-hitter. I was thinking, if I'm the Orioles, I might give him an extra day off.
Why not? I mean, because you don't want to risk it. I don't know if he feels that way or knows everything that you just mentioned, but why not? He's 28 years old.
You need him the rest of the way for an Orioles team that's trying to get back to respectability. I would give him a little extra time to make sure there is no damage to his arm. Speaking of damage, Clint Frazier goes to the short porch in right field. The Yankees now lead 3-1 off of Lance McCullers.
Man.
So the tie game didn't last long. Hopefully they can get more runs on Gerrit Cole. Back with a whole lot more as we're just a half hour in. It is the Press Box at ESPN.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, half hour into the program. We got it kick-started for you. Correa just missed the home run foul on the left field foul pole, but the Astros are trailing 3-1 to Gerrit Cole and the Yankees, top of the fifth.
They're probably going to get swept.
I don't disagree with you. I hope that we're wrong. I hope they find a way to salvage a game. But again, I'm not going to lose any sleep over the fact that if they do, Yankee fans can rejoice and go to social media and scream expletives and be all giddy. But guess what? You couldn't even make it to the American League Championship Series or the World Series with all these years you're bitching about. So get over it. It's over. It's in the past. In the future, right now, you're trying to scrap just like the Astros are trying to scrap, trying to make sure that you win the division and get in the playoffs. If you do, we'll see you then. We'll see you the one series at Minute Maid Park. Otherwise, I really don't care.
So what is this drama with the Indiana Pacers? Because it doesn't look like they have a healthy culture over there. We talk about the Rockets. The culture over there in Indiana looks like it is absolutely disastrous.
You want to take a... Because I know how much you like pronouncing names. You saw the...
Goga Batadze. Batadze.
That's the player, right? Okay, I'm going to give you that one. That's close enough. I'm going to say yes to that, Nicholas. But the bigger problem is that the Pacers made a change last year at head coach. And when they did, they thought that they were getting a player coach, an up-and-coming coach, a guy that was going to be a relationship builder and a guy that was going to, you know, take this young Pacers team and work with them and mold them and do some things with them. So evidently that hasn't happened because the stories started surfacing, and I think Woj was the first to report it, that there was so much turmoil within the Pacers organization that everybody had been put on notice they were going to keep a close eye on Nate Bjorkgren's future after not even completing yet his first year as a head coach in the NBA, because they said he has a ton of work to do in terms of building relationships with players, staff, coaches, and that it wasn't where the organization wanted it to be. So you figured, okay, he's got work to do. He's been put on notice. That means they'll all be on their best behavior. But no, former NBA player and now Pacers assistant coach Greg Foster, who Rockets fans will remember from being a part of some of those hated Utah Jazz teams when they used to play him, and Goga Batadze have an on-court exchange that gets them both fined. And it's another bad look for the Pacers.
So what happened was Batadze let Harkless get to the rim for a second chance dunk. Greg Foster blew up because he let him do that and didn't really contest it. Then Batadze hits a three-pointer. Then when he runs back, you can clearly read his lips saying, sit the bleep down.
Yep.
So that's what happened. He mouthed off to the assistant coach because he was getting on to him for his lack of defense or his hustle. And then Batadze thought it was justified to say that because he hit a three-pointer on the other end.
Then Foster waits till a timeout, and when the timeout comes and Batadze comes to the bench, Foster, as any ex-NBA player would do, basically would not let himself be disrespected like that, goes off, has to be held back. It's a bad, awful look for any team, but particularly since your head coach has already been put on notice and told to work on his relationships. It's a really, really bad look for the Pacers. That seems like a complete overhaul is needed yet again with an Indiana team that let Victor Oladipo go, made several coaching changes, still have a good core nucleus of players when you think about Miles Turner and you think about Sabonis and you think of some of their quality players that are good young pieces to build around. But yet, if they can't get wrong right like that, that's a big issue.
Well, they're saying the competitive juice is just flowing over there right now. So when things are up in the air, when, like you said, the coach has been put on notice and things are up in the air, everybody now is starting to jump at the opportunity to be looked at, to be in that positive spotlight. So that's probably why you get a lot of that. And look, as a former NBAer, he's not going to have that either. If your player is just going to straight tell you, shut the bleep or sit the bleep down in front of everybody, I would do that too. Unfortunately, he had to get punished because they're trying to make set an example. But I think any coach would react that way if a player did that to him. Just because you made a three-pointer, it doesn't mean you can't get criticized for not hustling. And second chance points is a perfect opportunity for a head coach to criticize you in basketball, because second chance points are not supposed to happen. Now, if there's a player that's just known to be really good with offensive rebounds and does it all the time, that's one thing. But it's on you to get the defensive rebound, because in most cases it happens more. It's more likely that the defensive rebound happens more than the offensive rebound. So I can see how you get onto somebody about the hustle. And players should not be mad if a coach gets onto you about your hustle. But this is the new NBA, and criticism doesn't You have to have like
well, and you lose your credibility as an assistant coach too, right?
There's an art to criticizing players now. It's not just going up to anybody doing that like normally, you know.
If you're an assistant coach, you lose your credibility if you allow that to just go without saying anything and addressing it, because the next player that you yell at is going to probably think the same thing. I don't have to listen to you, and if I want to, I can tell you to go F off.
It just creates a bad culture.
Right.
It just spreads throughout the it happens. It happens everywhere. And right now it's happening in Indiana.
And I also, you know, I think that's where and you see this work or it doesn't work. You know, the opposite of that is when if people start saying you need a veteran coach and you know what, Nate wasn't getting it done for you, but that's only because Nate could only get you to the playoffs in the first round and you thought that you should have been going further. You didn't realize how good a job Nate was doing just getting you to the first round and being competitive. Because now you look at it and then everybody's going to say, well, you need a veteran coach. Well, sometimes that doesn't work out either, and I give you the New Orleans Pelicans as Exhibit A because Stan Van Gundy was supposed to be that veteran coach to take that young team of kids that need to be kind of nurtured and shown how to win and how to really be professionals. And how'd that work out so far for them? They're underachieving. Zion and Ingram and all the talent in the world, Ball and otherwise, can't get it done. They keep losing games. They're fighting just to try and get into the play-in. So
they're also in Indiana. Who wants to play in whack-ass Indiana? Let's be honest.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
I mean, they haven't been tough or anybody. Was the last time anybody wanted to play there was the Reggie Miller days. Was there any other time when Oladipo had his moment?
Vic went to Indiana. Victor Oladipo went to the University of Indiana. So him coming back to Indiana and getting out of the hellhole situation he was in with OKC was something that he welcomed at the time. Yeah. It just didn't work out. But he liked Indiana.
It's just that's a tough market for anybody. So I kind of feel sorry for Nate because that's a tough market for anybody to be successful. If you don't have some really good player to draft, like from the beginning, like coming from the college level, if you don't have someone that you can groom and keep there like a Zion, it's really, really hard to attract other players there. It's really hard.
But they have a good arena, a very modern arena that's very, very well, highly thought of. And on top of the arena, you know, the Indianapolis is not, it's a pretty hip city. There's a lot going on, and you do have the Colts there as well. And we just saw the NCAA have their entire tournament right there in that Indianapolis area. It could be a lot worse. The weather sucks.
It's great for sports venues and sports events. That's no question. But just going to the city, just, I mean, and look, I remember Michael Jordan saying the Pacers were like the toughest team to face in the East outside the Detroit Pistons. But like at that time, that's when I felt like Pacers fans were that excited. Like, that was the last time I felt like Pacers fans were super excited about their team. And it was when Reggie Miller was going at it and had his little, you know, little wars with
MJ,
Michael Jordan.
But you know what? And even during the Last Dance, you forget how good those Pacer teams were and how big they were.
Really
and that
were.
Was at a time when big men were really important. You had Rick Smith. You had the Davis brothers up front that were just bone-crushing big men that cleaned the glass and defended the rim. And you had Mark Jackson. And you had Detlef Schrempf, and you had all the role players that contributed to what that team. That team was deep. It was talented. And a lot of times people thought that was the team that should have made it to a finals and never did. So you're right. Those were great teams. But since then.
But there was a lot of excitement around those teams.
Oh,
back
yeah.
Then. There was
and those
so
Bulls Pacers matchups, like you mentioned, it wasn't just Reggie and MJ. Those were the two best teams in the East. And then the Knicks thrown into the mix. Those three teams were everybody wanted to see when they were playing one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember those games, dude. I remember Reggie Miller. Like, as a kid, that's when I actually really, I would watch basketball, I would pay attention a lot. Like, now, I don't know if it's my age or the NBA has turned me off. I don't watch it as much, or I'm not as invested as I used to be. And it's unfortunate.
I think the pandemic and the Rockets
have a lot to do with it. Definitely has something. James Harden, and the fact that I got to go to these games, I'm so happy that I never met Hakeem Olajuwon when I was a big fan of the Rockets. I would have not wanted. And I'm not saying Hakeem Olajuwon is a bad dude. I'm just saying when you're covering them and you're going to these games a lot, it almost takes the fun out of it because you're an adult now and everybody's and it just I don't know what it did. I'm not as invested as I used to be. It's unfortunate, but it's just the way it is.
Well, you know what, and I think
those games, dude, I used to pay attention to every single one of those Reggie Miller games.
Before the pandemic, you were going to almost every home game.
I was, yeah.
So I think as an outsider looking at your basketball fandom, I think the fact that you can't go to games anymore and your Rockets team that you've always grown up with sucks, and like you said, and their best players are gone, it takes all of the interest level and the fun away from that. And so then as an extension, you're like, because you know what? I finally got there. I didn't think I'd ever get there. And this last week, I told you, I had no idea the one night that the Rockets even played.
Yeah, that's.
And I watched, it was the first night of the NFL draft. I literally watched the whole NFL draft and completely forgot the Rockets were even on.
Why the hell would you watch the Rockets? The Rockets are, they're a joke. That's a disaster. And look, I get it. The Rockets have some good players on that squad. I like Christian Wood. I like him a lot. I actually like Kelly Olynyk. I didn't think he'd turn out as good as he would, but he did. I don't know if he'll remain in a Rockets uniform, but I like the way he's playing. I like some.
But you know what, Nick? Here's the thing, and I'm with you on Olynyk. And again, if you missed it last night, they got blown out by the Sixers. Daryl Morey came back. Yeah, he talked to the media. Who cares?
Tribute video? Was there a video for him or no?
I don't know if there was a. People were joking about it. I don't know if there was a video for him or not.
Either.
If someone was actually at the game, around the game, or watched the game enough to tell us if there was a video, I'd be interested in that. But they were only playing with 8 healthy guys last night. We already knew that John Wall, and you're not going to see Eric Gordon and all the different guys. But then the guy that they've been watching the most, scrutinizing the most, putting all their hopes on the most, and I say that even with Christian Wood playing at the time. But when Kevin Porter Jr. sprains an ankle and he goes down and you're down to 7 healthy bodies, you realize it's time to just call it a year anyway. I mean, they're doing what they need to do in losing, but there's no sense in even trying to be competitive if it means some of your younger players, because KJ Martin played great last night too. But you've seen all you need to see of KJ Martin. You've seen all you need to see out of Porter Jr. I don't need to see anyone. Now, if you want to show me Armani Brooks, fine, because he's shown spurts of being a guy that might be worth keeping around. You know, Kelly Olynyk, I hope he likes the culture, but more so for Kelly Olynyk, it's going to be about, do I like the coach? Do I like the facilities? Do I like Houston? Do I believe in the next year or so they're going to turn this thing around? Because you're right, he'd be a valuable piece. But what I don't like, Nick, is the Kool-Aid drinkers that think the Harden trade is justified now because we got Kelly Olynyk.
No, and the age is a big problem for Kelly Olynyk, too. He may not want to be a part of the growing pains. He's already 30.
He may want to win.
He's already 30, so there's a good chance that he may not even be in a Rockets uniform. I just said I like the way he's playing right now for
Houston.
He and
Avery Bradley can go away.
I mean, he's just, I mean, look, he's 30 years old. I don't, how long does he have? And a guy like him, if once he hits 33, he's either one, he's probably wanting to get like that last big contract that he possibly can get,
well,
and play on a good team. You know what I mean?
Because
you
don't know how he's going to give him some money. The Rockets could give him some money.
But it doesn't matter. They're probably not going to be a winning team when they do that.
Those are the two different things you said. If it's about winning, he's playing elsewhere. If it's about money, he may stay because he knows that here he's got a role carved out for him and they're not going to have a really big roster to where they could probably give him some good coin, decent coin. But if it's about winning, he's going to go somewhere else for sure.
Yeah.
And Avery Bradley probably does the same thing.
But the thing is, he can get paid regardless. He doesn't need to stay in Houston to get paid. If he shows enough consistent enough numbers, that NBA money will come right. It should come right at him. He'll be fine. He can go. He can go even if the team is not a championship team. You can find several teams that are better than the Rockets that'll probably make the playoffs. Maybe jump on a team that's a 4 or 5 seed in the East or the West. You can do that.
Well. We'll see what he does, but for this season, it's over. You just hope the ping pong balls fall their way and they can turn this thing around quicker and sooner rather than later. So, again, Astros still trailing 3-1, bottom of the 5th, I believe, for the Yankees at the plate with 2 outs. We've got more to talk about as we're rolling through hour number 1 of the 3-hour program. So stick with us. Much more coming around the corner. It's the Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey! Wrapping up hour number 1, 3-hour program, Press Box, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. As we welcome in Mr. Brostash, one of our lifelong Twitchers, as we continue the dialogue both on Twitch, Twitter, text, you name it, we got it. Nick and I talking about a whole lots of different things. Look, I heard you and Patrick Creighton, because you guys are buddies, talking about the Dwight Howard story of a couple years ago. I'm here to tell you the other side of that.
Okay.
It's as believable as all believable. And the
story,
reason is
the story that Patrick said, told.
He was like, yeah, I mean, I heard Pat talking about the fact that, you know, you have much to do about nothing, and that there really was, and who cares about the players that were talking about it, because they won't. The fact of the matter is that was one of the most excruciating years that any of us had to work through, because the hate was so bad between James and Dwight that they literally drew a line in the locker room, and Dwight, for obvious reasons, migrated to all the younger players, the Isaiah Cannons, the Sam Deckers, and James was pretty much, because he was getting private jets and taking guys places, trying to buy off his teammates with party trips and things like that. But it was so chippy that during practice, any guy would help up any other guy on the team unless either James or Dwight fell. And then it was like, well, whose team are you on? Whose side are you on? And it got worse, and it got worse, and it got more petty. And it was like, you guys are grown-ass men making millions and millions of dollars. It's really come to this. But that's when you first saw signs of who James really was, too. Because Dwight was immature, and Dwight was going to do what Dwight was going to do. He used to play the punch nut game on the bench, and he got caught. And we didn't know. We tried to bury the video, but there was... You know, by that time, people saw it, where you just got a bench shot.
That's hilarious. I like that. I think that's funny.
You know, oh, you looked! And then punch a young guy right in the balls while they're trying to watch the game.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing if you're in intermediate school. But we knew who Dwight was. We were still trying to figure out who James was.
It is a random story, though, to bring up 5 years after the fact. Like, it's not a story right now. No. Like, it's not. I mean, I think that's what Patrick's point was. They're bringing up a story between James Harden and Dwight Howard. He's had soured relationships between Chris Paul and other players on that Rockets squad since that relationship. That's why it was a weird story. It literally happened in, what, 15, 16? That was a long time ago.
And you remember that with Dwight Howard and James Harden, we still made the Western Conference Finals. It was amazing to all of us. But Dwight got his guy when he got Jace Move, Josh Smith, because they had known each other since AAU ball. And so he felt a little bit more comfortable. James started to feel comfortable with some of the other guys that they got, Jason Terry, Trevor Ariza, who really kind of kept James in line. But the reason why I think it was significant was it was the beginning of figuring out who James really was, where if you weren't on Team James, he was going to let you know. And then if it didn't change, he was going to management, and he was going to stay, and you were going to go. And that's where Dwight left, and that's where we saw the whole progression of superstars that came and went that showed you exactly his true colors and the revolving door that was the Rockets.
Well, he can't do that anymore. He's on a Brooklyn Nets team with a lot better players and two other stars that are probably not going to take his garbage. I don't think he's talking to Kyrie and KD the way he was talking to players on the Rockets squad.
And the Kyrie thing, when are you going to mature? Did you see that? Now he got fined $35,000. The Nets got fined $35,000 because he continues to not listen
to and obey the
rules of talking to the media. Well, you know, we can go up and down the list, Nick, but when a guy takes 9 months off and then he comes back and then he needs rest and then mentally he's not in the right place and he needs more games off and then he needed to take some personal time.
He can get away with it. That's why.
That's on the Nets.
That's why he can get away with it. That's why. I feel like this guy would have done it on any freaking team.
I don't.
I think he would have gone away with it on any freaking team.
I don't, because I think they're like the Miami Heat, for example, from Pat Riley on down. They ain't playing that game. They're not about that life.
The problem
is
Irving's going to come out of that situation, whether he's on load management or personal time, whatever. He's going to come back and he's going to drop 27 points and he's going to give you 10 assists and he's going to play his freaking ass off. That's the problem. And speaking to someone like that is a challenge when he can go and take 5, 6, 7, 8 days off and then come back and be the exact same player that he has been for years. That's amazing, and it's really, really hard to deal with. It's really hard for anybody to deal with.
But I'm just saying there are franchises out there that aren't going to let you be bigger than the team.
I heard you. I know. I'm just saying that's still a difficult task for anybody. That's a
difficult
task
anybody. You got to have guys. And again, kind of like going back to the Pacers situation, it takes an ex-player that can say, I've been there, bro. I've put my years in, and we're not taking this crap, as opposed to if he had the wrong coach, if he had a first, like Steve Nash. You got a first-year head coach. Though Steve Nash has NBA experience as a player, Steve's never been a leader, like a yeller, like a, you know, shut-up-and-play kind of guy. But if you get the right kind of guy, and you got a Pat Riley, a no-nonsense guy his whole career, or you get guys that, even Stan or Jeff Van Gundy, they're not going to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Van Gundy would not be his coach, I assure you. I guarantee you. You know what I mean? He would not be his coach if that's the case. If Irving felt that was going to be the vibe he was going to get out of the coach, he probably wouldn't want to play for him. That's why Steve Nash, you know, still not too far removed from being a player, is probably the perfect coach for Irving and KD and James Harden right now. They're players' coaches. You know what I mean? Mike D'Antoni wouldn't have done that, and he's old school. You know what I mean?
D'Antoni had a problem, though, because he couldn't control James.
Right,
so you're right.
He's a player's coach. Yeah. I mean, he's gonna give him what he wants. So
Rockets lose to the Sixers. No big deal there. Daryl made the comment that every time I go back to Boston or Houston, of course I'm going to have some extra emotions and feelings. And it was really just a fluff show that no one, you know, I think that if anybody was really going to ask, and that's the problem that I have with the media. If anybody was going to really have to ask the tough questions, I would have been there to ask the question, hey, Daryl, do you feel bad at all for the situation you left the Rockets in before you left town and all the draft picks that aren't there and all the moves that you made that now are leaving them kind of in a tough spot? That's what I would have wanted to hear him respond to.
Yeah. I don't know if any beat writer would do that considering he's not with the team anymore. You know what I mean? It'd be like a tasteless question almost at this point. Or would it not be?
I think it's pretty pertinent.
I mean, he's coming in. He's coming into Houston where he's worked for what? How many years? 8 years. He's got to have some sort of feelings for that building and for Houston, right? He can't absolutely hate him. He did get paid and make a fortune being here in Houston.
Right. But he also got paid more once he got out, and he knew it. So he took Tillman for a buyout payment, which was just free
that's
money.
That's on Tillman. Be a better owner, homie.
Well, there's a lot. Again, we're not the Pacers yet, but there's a lot that has to be tightened up around the Rockets before
next
year.
Maldonado can't get a hit even if you put a gun to his head, and then he gets two hits against Garrett Cole.
Yeah, well, the first one, if you saw it, was a complete seeing eye blooper that everybody should have caught.
I didn't see it.
I didn't see
the blooper hit, but
yeah.
This fool doesn't get any hits. And then I look at the stat line and it says he got two hits against Cole. I'm like, what is going on here?
It's quite possible he gets his average over 100 today with those two hits.
Ooh, that's exciting.
100. That could possibly happen. Bummer for Astros fans, by the way, Nick. On that Astros front, after they get out of New York and escape from New York today, they head back home to the friendly confines of Minute Maid Park for a 3-game series against the Toronto Blue Jays. Say it isn't so. George Springer back on the injured list after having the early issues with his core muscles. He now has a quad strain and will not be playing for the Toronto Blue Jays in his return to Minute Maid Park, video or not.
God, that feeling has to suck for every team. So many players out there that people have just given contracts to, and it's like, God, I hate to see it. 341 million reasons for Tatis. Who was the other? Was it Odor who just got paid? Not Odor. Lindor, I think, was the guy.
Lindor
that just got paid.
And now he's scuffling, too.
And he's struggling right now. And now Springer. And to be honest with you, as an Astros fan who absolutely loved George Springer and appreciate, I want to see him play. I want him to do well for the Toronto Blue Jays,
man. I do, too. But I think there's a lot of people that piss me off, Nick, because the first thing you see on Twitter is, good. That's why we shouldn't have signed him in the first place. Because if we'd have signed him and he was out all this time.
Man, Springer was amazing for Houston.
He's my favorite Astro of these last 4 or 5 years. I wanted them to bring him back. They didn't. You live with it. You move on.
Great attitude. Great clubhouse guy. Like, I have nothing but good things to say about George Springer, man. I hope he does. I hope it's not a situation where he's injury prone and he's always missing games. Because I want him to do well.
Good news is he got paid. So even if it is, he'll get paid. He still will be a legend in Astros lore for being the MVP of the World Series win and all the things he was able to do when he was here. And we knew money was an issue with him. He still kind of held a grudge against the franchise because they held him back where he could have gotten paid sooner. He got his money. Whether he stays healthy the rest of his career or not, he's going to live a great life with no financial issues, and he deserves it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he didn't forget how the Astros kind of held him under control, and he could have got paid more. Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he's never going to forget that. He's never going to forget that. But at the same time, too, man, like, is it bad that I want to see a Major League Baseball owner? Like, I want to sit where he's sitting, watching the game, and then he's watching a player that he just paid millions and millions of dollars swing, and then all of a sudden he has to walk off the game. Like, I want to see that facial reaction. Like, I have to write a check every single game or on the 1st and the 15th of every month for the games that you played. And it's a massive number. And now I have to watch you from my suites walk off the field after I gave you a $341 million contract. I just want to see what the reactions are. Are they yelling? Are they throwing stuff in the suites? Like, what are they doing?
Well, I lived it. And when you had one of your two best players go down, and we were sitting, we knew where Les sat, obviously mid-court, first row. We knew where Tad sat, and we knew where Rafael sat. And Rafael just had to be seen. So if one of those guys went down and Keith Jones started walking him to the locker room, we were like, get your stopwatch out. Who's going to be the first one to get to the tunnel? Because you would watch those three guys
freak out.
And a lot of times Les would send Tad on his behalf, but then Tad and Rafael would be hovering, standing next to the player in the training room and needing to know exactly how he was. And it's like, you're not a medical professional and you're not going to change the situation. Sure, you want an update, but the doctors are trying to figure it out right now. So they probably could use some space to get it so that they can understand what's going on. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be an awful feeling. And that's why I think, you know, Jim Crane in a lot of ways is looking at the Correa situation the way we are. He's a fan favorite. He was great last year in the playoffs. But can I really see paying him $30 million plus a year? He ain't getting Lindor money here.
And that's the thing. I look at Lindor, and this guy, he looks like he's like he came from the from the minor leagues. Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, you just got paid.
Yeah, he's
that's bad, dude. I hate to be an owner in that regard.
It is an adjustment going from the American League to the National.
That's what
league.
They're saying. He's not seeing the same pitchers, but
and,
still,
and the same zone and all that. But here's the thing: when you do that in a market like New York, all they care about is you just got $314 million. You damn well better start performing, and we are coming at you, and that's no fun.
No question.
So, all right, that's one in the books. We still got two to go. 2 hours of the show. We'd love to have you be a part of it. 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter as well. We'll get hour number two started in just a few minutes right here on the Press Box on ESPN.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5.